Good morning, and welcome back to the Same Page Podcast, where we go over some background knowledge to give us a more fundamental understanding before we come to a conversation with each other, and so we can avoid just, arguing over random things that are totally irrelevant from the topic to begin with. So today, there's been a lot of talk recently, about America heading towards authoritarianism. And so I think that the most important thing we could do before we have that discussion is to just flat out define authoritarianism. So authoritarianism is a form of government or leadership characterized by strong central power, limited political freedoms, and minimal accountability to the public. And in an authoritarian system, power is concentrated in the hands of the leader, ruling party, or small elite. Political opposition is often restricted, suppressed, or outright banned. Individual rights and freedoms, such as freedom of speech, press, and assembly, are limited. Decision making is top down with little or no input from citizens. Enforcement often relies on censorship, propaganda, and sometimes coercion or force. Unlike democracy, where leaders are accountable to people through elections and checks and balances, authoritarian regimes prioritize stability, order, and control, sometimes justify restrictions on freedoms as necessary for security or unity. So I'll go into a little bit later my thoughts on things, but a lot of that I do think is happening right now. So my next question that I asked was, are there signs to look out for when a democracy is falling into authoritarianism, and what are they? Short answer, yes. Political scientists and historians have identified warning signs that a democracy may be sliding into authoritarianism. These usually appear gradually, not all at once, which makes it easy to overlook until a shift becomes obvious. Here are the most common signs. Political and institutional signs. Erosion of checks and balances. Courts, legislatures, and watchdog agencies lose independence and are stacked with loyalists. Undermining elections. Attempts to weaken free and fair voting, such as voter suppression, gerrymandering, discrediting, sorry, election results, and manipulating electoral rules. Attacks on democratic norms. Leaders ignore traditions of restraint, refuse peaceful transfers of power, or undermine trust in institutions. Power concentration. Leaders extend term limits, bypass legislators, or rule by decree. Before going to the next section of this, I think that the political and institutional science portion, every single one of them is happening. And I think that's kind of undeniable, no matter what side of the spectrum you're on, that these things are actively happening. And I think that that should raise some alarm flags for anyone, whether you support the current administration or not. I think that we can all agree that democracy is a good thing, and we want to be able to vote on things and have a say in things. And that is the whole reason that, we had the war back in the day where we became our own nation, and we had the Declaration of Independence and the 4th of July and all that fun stuff that makes everybody so patriotic every summer. So next section, civil liberties and rights, suppression of dissent. Opposition parties, activists, and critics face harassment, legal prosecution, or outright bans. So the legal prosecutions, harassment, all of this is happening right now. They're going after their political opponents. A lot of it has to do with real estate fraud or whatever they're going after them for now. But it's kind of that situation where, find me a criminal and I'll show you the crime kind of situation. Censorship or propaganda. Independent media is restricted, replaced with state-controlled or loyal outlets spreading disinformation. I think a good example of this would be how the press pool, when the White House secretary speaks, I think that's her name, that blonde girl, when she talks, they changed it from, they framed it as opening it up to multiple news outlets now that we live in more of a podcast generation and altering that. But what really happened was that I think it was an opportunity and an excuse to get rid of legitimate media sources. And so you can be asked more, softball questions, things like that, not be asked anything too difficult or stay on topics that you want to be on. Know that the people in there that are going to ask you questions are loyalists. Restriction of civil society, NGOs, unions, or protest movements are weakened or criminalized. I think I vaguely remember a conversation where the current administration, joked with Elon about how you should just fire everybody who tries to unionize and you should just get rid of them because, you can't have that kind of situation. So that's happening. Surveillance and policing, citizens are monitored more heavily with increasing use of police and security forces against protesters. That one is very, very obvious that it's happening with the National Guard going everywhere. I mean, it looks like, I don't even know. The way that I hear it described in the news almost sounds like if you change like a few words in the context of things, it doesn't sound that different than like if you were telling me the story of how we went and got Osama bin Laden, like the way the helicopters showed up and people propelled down and we got him, and like just the crazy things that are happening now inside the US is alarming to say the least, in my opinion. Cultural and social signs. Demonization of opponents. Political rivals are framed as enemies of the nation or traitors. Quite literally, they are waging war against the quote unquote enemy within, which is very, easy to interpret as the opposition, the other political party that is not themselves. Making them the enemy, which is, a sign. Rise of nationalism or populism. Leaders claim they only re represent the true people, dismissing pluralisms. So, I think that is also happening when it comes, whether it's, immigration, trans people, LGBTQ, non-whites, people who don't speak English. I think the list goes on and on. If you picture, the straight white man that goes to church, I think that if you don't have that aesthetic, it's divisive. Honestly, just to not look like that is something that will, people will think that you are the other just because you don't fit that cookie cutter, good Christian boy or girl look. And I think that is, dangerous. And I think that we're feeding into that a lot because we need a quote unquote enemy, similar to how back in the day Hitler needed a quote unquote enemy, and the Jewish population just happened to fit that for his desires. So the next area would be personal rule indicators. Cult of personality. The leader is glorified as infallible, portrayed as a sole protector of the nation. I think this is a very big one. It's going to trigger a lot of people, but the cult of personality, I think, is I don't know. There's a relative I have. It was a while ago. I think it was during the first term that his phone background, was the president of the United States. And I don't know why, but to me that feels very weird. The way that people just like everything about him, like they just love him. They think he's the best thing in the entire universe. Like he's better than God almost. And I think that's weird to me. I think that, I think Joe Biden was an amazing president. I think he accomplished crazy feats and he did really, really well. And I didn't have, a picture of him as my phone background. The only way I could see that being, not culty, in my opinion, is if you're an African American and your phone background was Obama, because I think the historical significance of that just being a first is such a big moment that I think that that justifies that for you. But I don't know. I think that just having him as a phone background or like just his face all over your t-shirts. An old coworker of mine had Trump money that wasn't even real that she'd give out to people for doing favors and stuff. And I don't know. It's not normal politics anymore. There's a godlike lens that people seem to be seeing him through, and I think that it is kind of alarming. Militarization of politics, armed forces, police, or paramilitary groups become tools for maintaining power. That's literally happening. Like I talked about earlier, the National Guard is out there. Democracy doesn't collapse overnight. It quote unquote dies by a thousand cuts with small changes. Day by day by day, you take an inch and eventually you've traveled a mile and you don't know how you got here. I think that a lot of people want to say that we can't, compare the situation to Germany or how things were happening before. But I think that also if you went to Germany, right before things got really bad, they would tell you if this was like a parallel universe where the Holocaust already happened, and then they who were about to enter the Holocaust, they would tell you, well, you can't compare us to them because we're not at the apex yet. So you're comparing in your head the apex of the worst that it possibly got to the stair steps leading up to that. And I think that's the argument people make, is they say you can't compare these stair steps that we're currently on to the peak of something historically that happened that was horrible. And I think that is a dangerous way to frame it because there are warning signs, and you need to look out for those warning signs, and you shouldn't dismiss them just because we haven't reached the apex yet. Because once we do reach the apex, it's too late. And then the next question I wanted to ask, because as I keep bringing up, Nazi Germany, I just asked, is that what happened with Hitler? And the response was exactly. Adolf Hitler's rise in Germany is one of the clearest examples of a democracy sliding into authoritarianism. Here's how Hitler exploited and dismantled democracy step by step. Number one, exploiting crisis and discontent. Germany faced economic hardship. Hitler and the Nazis banned sca or blamed scapegoats, Jews, communists, and others, and promised national revival. Many people turned to extreme solutions out of desperation. Okay, so I'm going to compare those three to now. Economic hardship, I think that everybody, inflation's bad. COVID response wasn't that great. I think a lot of people are unhappy. It's very hard for people my age to buy a house. A lot of things like that. Grocery bills are going up, healthcare is going up. So economic hardship, we are definitely there. Hitler and the Nazis blame scapegoats, Jews, communists, and others. I think that a lot of times we are blaming, we're blaming the trans community, we're blaming the Mexicans, we're blaming the immigrants. And personally for me, like just on the surface, I think that blaming a minority for a majority problem that we have is kind of just from like a mathematical standpoint, it doesn't make sense to me. So say that you're, a teacher and you have a class, and your class is of 100 people, and you have one kid in that class that is different from all the others, and they score really poorly. So, but everybody else in your class is a straight A student. Your average is still an A, even if that kid totally fails. So to me, just by like the law of averages or however you want to call it, it doesn't make sense to blame a minority and to just single them out and like think that all of your possible faults are because of them. Just from a mathematical standpoint, it doesn't make sense. And then I think the deeper you dig into it, it even makes less and less sense. Undermining democratic institutions, the Nazi Party gained seats legally through elections, but used violence and intimidation to weaken rivals. I think that that's what's happening right now with, the current administration going after political opponents for, anything they could find to try to jail them. They're making political enemies. There was a DM that was sent publicly by mistake that was, basically go after my enemies. So I think that that's also a little bit undeniable. Hitler was appointed chancellor in 1933 through backroom deals, not by outright majority rule. I did not know that. I think that that is kind of similar to today. I think that we're entering a point in democracy where it is a little bit pay to play. If you have enough money, you can control the narrative. If you have the media, you control the narrative. I think that if you have enough cash, you can win, just because you have the resources that you need to really get your message out and be above them. And if you have enough money, you can really slander somebody into the ground with or without any legitimate backing to what you're saying about them. Soon after, he pushed the Reich Fire Decree, the Reichstag, if I'm saying that correctly, which suspended civil liberties and allowed indefinite detention of opponents. I think that is really scary. I think that is something that we, are kind of seeing today with the alligator Alcatraz and things like that, where we're swooping them all up and we're detaining them, and we're not really letting members of Congress in to see the conditions there. We're not really giving them trials. We've deported people without giving them due process and sent them to places that we said we could not get them back from. However, I believe we did get him back, but still, it's a slippery slope, and I think that we're tiptoeing towards, a very similar situation. Number three, consolidating power. The Enabling Act of 1933 gave Hitler the power to pass laws without parliamentary approval, essentially ending democracy. I think that we are also seeing a similarity to that now with these presidential powers, because they're making up excuses for, this is a national crisis, this is a national emergency, I have to be able to act, which is not what that was written for. And we are not in a national crisis just because we have immigrants here. The Statue of Liberty is a symbol of freedom for immigrants to see as they come to this country. It is very much an American value at, its core when we became a country and a nation of our own, but that's a topic for another time. The suppression of freedoms, press and speech freedoms were destroyed. Only Nazi-approved messages were allowed. I think that that one specifically, I don't think we're at yet. However, the was it NPR possibly? I could be misquoting this. Whatever news organization was kicked out of the press pool because they would not call the Gulf of Mexico the Gulf of America. I think that is a very good example of this. However, broadly, I can't think of many other examples. I'm sure that they are out there, but off the top of my head, I can't. So I'm tempted to say that this specific one, we haven't really entered a like bad stage. But I could be wrong on that too. Like I said, it's just because it's not on the top of my head, but that doesn't mean it's not there. Cult of personality, totalitarianism. Hitler was glorified as the, I don't know, is that basically the father or the Führer or the embodiment of Germany. Loyalty to him personally became more important than loyalty to law or institutions. Dissent became unthinkable. Questioning Hitler was equated with betraying the nation. I think that we're kind of getting there. Some of these ways that people talk about the current administration is, I don't know, appalling to me to say the least. I just the ass kissing and, the sucking up and the inability to speak against him, even if he does something wrong. I feel like we're almost at a point to where, if he puts his shirt on inside out, people will come in there and be like, "Oh, wow, that looks really great. What have you done? This is so amazing. I can't believe you created this new sense of fashion." And they'll sell shirts that are, the seam is on the outside now and the tag is on the outside now. And everybody would start doing it because I think, we just have became this weird glorified person that everybody just for some reason wants to be behind no matter what and looks up to no matter what. A long time ago he said that he could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and wouldn't lose any voters, and I think that has become very evident, although they are still scared of the Epstein files, so we'll see how that turns out. But I really think that he's become a cult leader. And I think that people, need to kind of look in the mirror and, question some things. I think that, I, like I mentioned before, I loved Joe Biden. I thought he was great. I read his book. I read Hunter's book. I followed all his policies. I liked a lot of the things he did. Was he perfect? No. Nobody's perfect. There are things that he could have done better. There are things that maybe he could have done differently. I don't think that he is a, godlike figure. I don't think there is really any godlike figure on this planet. Besides Zac Efron, but that's beside the point. Similarities and patterns, not evidence. So this is going to compare specifically. ChatGPT is comparing Hitler to Trump. So this is not me. This is not my opinion. This is strictly what it is saying. Undermining institutions. Hitler used emergencies and decrees to bypass parliament. Trump often challenged courts, delegitimizing elections, dismissed checks on executive power. Attacks on the press. Hitler banned independent media and replaced it with Nazi-controlled outlets. Trump didn't ban media, but frequently called mainstream outlets fake news and enemies of the people, which eroded trust in journalism. Populist savior rhetoric. Hitler framed himself as Germany's only hope for national revival. Trump presents himself as the sole voice for the real America and delegitimizes political opposition as corrupt or unpatriotic. Polarization and scapegoating. Hitler targeted Jews, communists, and other enemies as and others as enemies of the state. Trump uses rhetoric against immigrants, Muslims, political opponents, and often phrases them as existential threats. Challenges to election. Hitler, after gaining power, eliminated electoral competition. Trump hasn't eliminated elections, but tried to overturn the 2020 election and continues to claim it was illegitimate. Key differences. So this is where the denials of us, you can really hang on to these ones. Systemic resilience. The US has a strong institutions, courts, independent states, free press, opposition parties. Germany was weaker, public trust was already collapsing. I think that we are. I'm going to disagree with ChatGPT here. I think that public trust is kind of collapsing currently. I do think we have stronger institutions, and I think that, the checks and balances are supposed to be there to protect from things like this. However, I think that they have a super majority in kind of legitimately every place of government. So I think that that's the big, replacing legitimate people with a loyalists that was mentioned before. And I think if you, take enough inches with that loyalist replacing, eventually it doesn't matter what the checks and balances are or how difficult it is. You have enough loyalists in enough places, you can get to whatever you want done. Scale and ideology, Hitler's regime became openly genocidal and expansionist. Trump's rhetoric is extreme, but not equivalent in scope or intent. So I think that one right there is the key that people love to point out the most when you say you can't compare the two. And like I said before, I think it's very important to note that we are stair-stepping our way to our peak. So you need to compare our steps now, our staircase that we're on, to the staircase of Nazi Germany, not the staircase we're on to the peak of the Holocaust, where everything bad was going on with the Jews and the concentration camps and all of that horrible stuff. That is a comparison that should not be made, and I 100% agree with that. We shouldn't compare the two. What we should be comparing is the steps before the peak, because that's where we're at. We're not at the peak yet, but where our peak will it be that high? Will it be that bad? We don't know. Next question. I wanted to just straight up ask, do you believe we are heading in that direction? I think that the argument, you can't compare the two, isn't that different than saying you can't compare Hitler to Hitler years before things got so bad. So that was basically what I was talking about. where the US shows authoritarian drift, erosion of trust in elections. A large portion of the population believes the 2020 election was illegitimate despite no evidence of widespread fraud. This distrust is the kindling authoritarianism movements thrive on. So we need to not trust the government, and we don't trust the government or the elections. It's a very dangerous thing, and it is a very big red flag. Delegitimizing opponents. Political rivals are framed as enemies of the people rather than loyal opposition. I reference Joe Biden a lot in this, so I'm going to reference him again because whatever. In his book, he talked about politically when he would sit down with people, there used to be this mindset that even if you disagreed with someone, the reason they came to the table to begin with is because they wanted to do good and they wanted good for the people. I think that we have largely lost the principle of charity that comes to these things, where we do not believe people come with charitable intentions. We think, excuse me, that the opposition is, demonic. They're child, insert, sexual term there, so that I probably can't say on here. We just demonize them. We see them as these, non-human monsters now, instead of someone that, like the quote I mentioned in the other podcast from the Fallout TV series, everybody wants to save the world, they just can't agree on how. I think that's where we used to be. Right now, I don't know if everybody's trying to save the world, and I think that's dangerous, and I might be part of the problem for thinking that because the other group thinks the same thing about us. But I think that it's a big issue, and it is a big red flag. Weakening guardrails, norms that used to restrain presidents, like respecting the judiciary, coinciding elections, or avoiding interference in independent institutions, are being tested and disregarded. I think this is another big one. All the lawsuits, the courts are having to strike him down. He's not listening to the courts, calling his enemies, these terrible people, these, saying elections aren't real. Independent institutions, it's just all of it. It's scary. Normalization of political violence, the January 6th attack, threats against election workers, and rhetoric about Second Amendment solutions show a troubling acceptance of force in politics. I would think that a man who has had multiple assassination attempts against himself would come out of the other end with a little bit more empathy, but it seems that we're still kind of pushing the narrative that we need more guns. We need more violence. We need to, get them. They need to pay for this. It's violence creating a call for more violence. And the last assassination that we had of Charlie Kirk, the immediate response was the people who did this are going to pay. They're going to get this. They're going to get that. We're going to go after them. It's going to be bad for them. And from the party that claims to be, the religious, morally high ground party, the turn the other cheek party, if you will, I think that it's an interesting knee-jerk reaction for them to have. And I think it's a scary knee-jerk reaction to have because just like with war, I think that's why it's really dangerous because group A does something to B and then B retaliates to A. And then the second you have both retaliated, you each have, been attacked, been hurt, and you each have a reason to keep going, digging deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And then where do we go from there? Sometimes we're in an argument and we've been arguing so long that we don't even know what we're arguing about. All of these things are happening, and it's just making us not trust each other. It's making us demonize each other. It's making us see each other not as neighbors, but as, legitimate and human enemies. And I think those are all major, major red flags. We need to come together instead of being, divided and hateful. And I think that the more divided we are, the more likely we are to fall. The comparison question, comparing 1933 Germany to today's US might be extreme, but comparing 1928 to 1932 Germany, when democracy was eroding, but before full dictatorship, is much more useful. So ChatGPT agrees with me. It says that we need to compare the steps to the steps, so to speak. And then I just straight up asked if it believes that we're, heading towards authoritarianism. And it listed like a lot of different groups that have talked about it, but I'm kind of going long on this episode, so I'll just, summarize. The scores aren't very great. There's quote unquote measurable democratic backsliding in the US, but country still rates as democracy. So technically we're a democracy. I think technically Russia is a democracy too, so take that for what it's worth. But the indicators, they're not great. To summarize, I think there's like 30 different ones that it came up with. They're not great. They're getting worse. And I think that's scary. Are we in a place where it's too late? Not necessarily. Could we get out of it? Maybe. Hopefully. But I think that, given everything that we've discussed, we've gone over the facts, we've defined the terms. I've gave more than a lot of my thoughts on the matter. I think we're headed there. I think that, I think that the doomsday crowd might be right about this one. And I hope that I'm wrong, but we've gone over the facts, we've defined the terms. Now that we're on the same page, what say you?